President Biden is hosting the leaders of Japan, Australia, and India at the White House today. The so-called Quad Summit involves four key democracies that are teaming up to try and counter China's rise. We're going to go to two of our international correspondents about this. Anthony Kuhn covers Japan and the Asia-Pacific region. He joins us now from NPR's bureau in Seoul, South Korea. Anthony, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Rachel.
And we've also got NPR correspondent Lauren Freyer, who covers India and the Indian Ocean region. Hey, Lauren.
Hi there.
So this is all about China, right, guys? So what exactly are these four countries worried about?
Well, there is a perception that China has really challenged maritime sovereignty in the Indo-Pacific. It's built commercial ports across the world, but it's also built military installations on reclaimed islands in the South China Sea. And that's a key waterway and a trade route. I mean, trillions of dollars in U.S. trade alone passes through there every year. And so a lot of these Quad countries see that as a threat to free trade and possibly even travel. Aside from that, all of these countries have other tensions with China. India shares a long border with China. Troops have fought there. Australia has had trade disputes with China. Japan and China both lay claim to some islands in the East China Sea. And the U.S., of course, has had a trade war with China under President Trump. Mm-hmm. But we should note that all of this anti-China stuff isn't totally explicit. So you may not actually hear President Biden name China very much today. And that's because all of these countries still trade a whole lot with China. And this is sensitive. China doesn't love the idea of these countries ganging up and talking about it behind its back.
Well, then on that note, Anthony, how does China see this meeting? How are they reacting?
Well, Beijing has made it clear that it sees the Quad as part of the U.S.'s overall strategy to encircle, contain, and thwart China's rise using its Cold War alliance network. And it claims that the Quad basically only serves to heighten tensions in the region. I think what's becoming increasingly clear in recent months is that China's leadership is preparing for what it believes is going to be a long-term struggle with the U.S., but one in which it believes it has the upper hand. So when the Biden administration says we can, the U.S. can collaborate with China on things like COVID and climate change, they can compete on economic issues, but that the U.S. may have to confront China on security issues, Beijing says you can't compartmentalize this relationship. You cannot confront us on one thing and expect cooperation on another. And they've made that clear to Biden administration officials who have visited China recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Anthony, you've spent a lot of time reporting on China and Japan. Walk us through how this looks from the Japanese perspective.
Well, Japan's mistrust and sense of threat from China has been growing for years. But Japan has a post-war pacifist constitution, which does not allow it to send troops to fight overseas. But it is an economic powerhouse, and it's already building a lot of the infrastructure in Asia. So Tokyo and Washington want to team up to provide what they consider an alternative to Chinese-built infrastructure in Asia, which they feel may make these countries beholden to Beijing. And they also want to build 5G networks and semiconductor plants, partly because these are strategic commodities, but also because they feel that these Chinese products could allow China to snoop or eavesdrop on other countries. The thing I think to remember, though, is that these are business decisions to be made by individual countries. And if they feel that China is offering a better deal, they may go with Beijing.
Well, you know, last week we reported on this new submarine deal between the U.S., the U.K., and Australia. And that was about China, too, right? I mean, is the Quad yet another defense pact?
Well, the U.S. explicitly states that it is not a military pact. Unlike, for example, NATO, no country has committed any troops to the Quad. And while the U.S. has military alliances with these individual countries like Japan and Australia, there's no collective defense agreement.
And actually, India, if I can jump in here, isn't even technically a U.S. ally. There is no treaty between India and the U.S. And so India has historically been pretty resistant to joining alliances. So rather than a defense pact, the Quad is more of like a loose strategic grouping.
So a loose strategic grouping, they're getting together. Is anything concrete expected to come out of this summit?
Well, the Quad has pledged to produce 1 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines by the end of 2022. India is where they'll be manufactured. Now, India's had a really tough year with COVID itself. We may hear a status update on those vaccine orders. We may hear fresh promises about climate change, about reducing coal use and moving toward renewable energy. India is the center of that, too. It's got a huge growing population and huge energy demands. Mm-hmm. And as Anthony explained, semiconductor semiconductors, supply chains for critical technology. Those are supply chains that the U.S. really wants to keep China out of.
All right. NPR's international correspondents, Lauren Frayer and Anthony Kuhn. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel.
Republican lawmakers in Arizona plan to release the results of their review of the 2020 election later today, and the Justice Department will be paying attention. The DOJ sent a letter this summer to state officials warning them that they had to follow federal law as part of a broader effort to protect the right to vote. NPR's Carrie Johnson has the story.
Recent Supreme Court decisions have undermined the way the Justice Department safeguards voting rights. Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta lamented that state of affairs in a conversation with me for the Texas Tribune Festival this week.
There's no question that the right to vote is very fragile and has been under attack.
Legislation to shore up some of the federal government's power is stuck in a closely divided Congress. But the Biden Justice Department says it's doing what it can, using existing legal authority. This year, DOJ doubled the number of attorneys in the Voting Rights Enforcement Unit. And it sent a letter to Arizona's state Senate, reminding lawmakers and private contractors they're on the hook for protecting the integrity of ballots in their election reviews. Now, nearly 9 months after Congress certified the 2020 election, other Republican-led states are following Arizona and starting to announce their own reviews. Vanita Gupta says the Justice Department is trying to send its own message about the so-called audits.
We felt like it was important as we saw these conversation about these audits begin to spread around the country that we issue the guidance that we did and make really clear that there are federal legal obligations about ballots, about post-election activity that jurisdictions needed to comply with and to put them on notice that we were being very vigilant about this.
Gupta wouldn't say whether the Biden administration plans to sue the Arizona Senate or the contractors at the firm Cyber Ninjas, who were hired to help with the election review. Instead, she says,
the department is committed to using every tool at our disposal to protect the right to vote, and we're going to use all of our authorities to do that.
Since last year's election, states have been passing new laws with new restrictions on voting and elections. The Justice Department sued Georgia in June, arguing its new law was passed with a racially motivated purpose. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed a new voting law earlier this month. The bill bans things like drive-through voting, which advocates say disadvantages voters of color.
Is it possible the DOJ is going to weigh in here with its own litigation the way it has in Georgia?
Yeah, the department is reviewing the recently signed bill.
Gupta wouldn't say whether another lawsuit was on the way, but she says the Justice Department won't hesitate to act if it sees laws that curb voters' access to the polls anywhere. Carrie Johnson, NPR News.
South Africa is a country known for its cultural diversity, but there's one common denominator. South Africans love barbecue, or braai. Today, the country celebrates Heritage Day, its national holiday. Over the years, it's become better known as Braai Day. Here's NPR's Eder Peralta.
Butcheries in Cape Town are ubiquitous. They're sort of like town squares. The butcher becomes your friend. You see your cousin, your uncle, your friend there on Saturday, and the local banjo player hangs out front looking for a tip. Romeo Roman, the butcher, walks me outside Excellent Meat, where he has South African sausages, boerwors, cooking on a fire.
The minute you see flames or charcoal, you know you're going to have a nice family day.
The smoke lifts from the coals and swirls into the air. It's salty, it's sweet. These are the elements of a perfect South African braai.
Braai, it's our heritage. You bring your friends together, you bring your family together.
A random South African might tell you that they were the first humans to throw meat on top of hot coals. A historian might dispute that, but South Africa is home to the Vanderwerk Cave, where ancient humans are first thought to have controlled fire. The Afrikaans name translates to Miracle Cave. About 10 years ago, that history inspired Jan Scannell, a well-known braai chef, to propose that on Heritage Day, all South Africans sit around a fire and share a meal.
And around the fire is a place where it's safe from wild animals. And of course, there's warmth and there's food and there's light.
The holiday quickly became known as Braai Day. And the liberation hero, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, became its patron saint. South Africa, Desmond Tutu is famous for saying, has 11 official languages. But braai has been adopted in all of them. In isiXhosa, in isiZulu, in English, in Sesotho, in a country so often divided, braai brings everyone together. So he loves the holiday for its simplicity.
All it calls for is come with your friends, your family, have a little fire, and braai.
Romeo the Butcher spent years working at grocery stores, but he always wanted to be a butcher because he says they keep this country running.
We would be maybe the engine of a car, because except for vegans, you can't have a meal without meat.
This braai day, he's going to light a fire, have a cold drink as he watches flames rise into the air, and when the coals glow orange, he'll throw a lamb shoulder on top of them. Seasoned subtly with garlic and rosemary. And of course, he's going to share it with friends. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Cape Town, South Africa.
I hope, Ader, that you get to eat some of that delicious barbecue. This is NPR News.